So good afternoon, everybody. My name is Youssef Khalidi. I'm here with Yuchen, who will give us some of the demos. This session is about the new features in Azure networking. And guys, we have a bunch of features that we announced at the event. So I will go and cover basically 6 or 7 features, show a couple of demos, answer your questions, and we have a small gift for you on the way out as well. And do please fill the questionnaire toward the end, okay? So this session is so sandwiched between a couple we've already had in the conference and a few more before the end of the conference. It's, if you will, give you the breadth view of the features, and then I'll give you pointers to specific talks on some of the features as well, okay? I have one marketing slide. It's about customer needs, but really in a nutshell, we are gearing to meet enterprise needs here. The enterprise requires high availability, control over the network, and meeting, if you, and the cloud meeting them, if you will, on their terms. The enterprise needs the network to meet their connectivity needs from their on-premises to the cloud. You see this as a common theme in what we're doing here. Scale of the public cloud is very important, and the question really is how do you utilize the public cloud, yet being able to use your on-premises assets? Yet be able to do the hybrid model, which is a whole connectivity story here, okay? So this is what motivates us, guys. You have been telling us for more than a year about some of these features, and I'm very happy that we are now have them available this week. So you've heard a lot about the hybrid approach in this conference, I'm pretty sure of that. On-prem to the cloud, from a hoster to the cloud. You see me speak this language, and you also see topologies now we now enable within the cloud and between clouds. Between even us and other clouds as well. So the theme here is to give you the ability to connect from anywhere to anywhere the way you want it, the way your applications need it. And this is a simplistic picture here. You may have on-prem your identity system like Active Directory. You may have your data tier like SQL. You have your app tiers, which can be quite sophisticated, multiple topologies and the like. There's typically a counterpart in a public cloud in Azure. Your identity may be synchronized with the public cloud, or it may get back from the cloud back to on-prem. Your data may be synchronized or projected one way or the other, and your apps speak back and forth. The key point, of course, is there's a network between them. And this network is something you have to deal with. And this is what we provide you with a bunch of tools here, from very lightweight tools to very sophisticated abilities to connect your on-prem through your service provider to Azure. So very quick overview of connectivity in Azure. If you know about Azure, this is a boring slide. If you don't know much about it, I'm going to go very light speed to tell you what we had today before this week, if you will. Very, very basically, you can have a service or an application running up in the cloud. It may have an endpoint, basically a virtual IP address that's load balanced. Up until this week, this IP address had to be a public IP address. You hit it from the internet. It hits the IP address, we load balance, we go to a bunch of virtual machines. You could also have within your application, your cloud service or your virtual network, multiple endpoints in which you can communicate freely within your envelope between your VMs. And the protocols within the envelope are anything you want to, etc. You also can draw a wider envelope, we call them virtual network, or VNets, in which you can do things like bring your IP addresses. So if you have your own IP address range that you want to have in the public cloud for your virtual network, you can do that. And you can configure it in multiple ways with ACLs and so forth. And of course, then we had a number of services, chief among them the ability to take your virtual network and connect it back to your on-prem using either site-to-site VPN technology or point-to-site. I'll say more about this in a second. So you can carve part of the cloud for yourself, put your IP addresses in there, connect them securely to your on-prem, and basically go to town. We had a bunch of restrictions, which we're basically removing as we speak this week. We also have other network services. For example, we have a traffic management service that uses DNS to load balance your traffic among multiple endpoints. And we're also extending it in this release as well. So this is a very simplistic slide, guys. I mean, if you've seen the old stuff we have in Azure, this is what we had before, if you will. What we're doing this week is we're announcing a slew of features to enhance everything I told you about before, plus add a new framework called ExpressRoute. So this is my presentation, guys. I'm going to go through all of these. In summary, there are a number of features for internet connectivity, how to improve the way your application receives its traffic from the internet, if you will. We have now the ability to reserve IP addresses, a highly sought feature, by the way. So you can, your IP address that represents your service can be reserved by you and reused. You can now do internal load balancing, which means you can have an endpoint in the cloud that's private to your application, to you, that's not visible on the internet, and to which you can go load balance. And then multiple scenarios, you can combine them with virtual networks to have very interesting topologies. We've enhanced Traffic Manager, so now we can do load balancing not only between Azure endpoints, but between Azure endpoints and external endpoints. So you may have an app that partially runs on premises and partially runs on Azure, and you can load balance between them. Or if you want to, frankly, you can load balance between us and another cloud provider. So this is about connectivity, if you will. This is the theme here. We also have enhanced the intra-region within the cloud communication. So you can, as I mentioned, but you can do load balancing, as I mentioned earlier. The one I missed earlier was we could also do instance-level IP addressing, which means you can have now the flexibility to take your VMs individually, give them public IP addresses with full fidelity of IP. Lastly, for intra-region communication, you can do now in-region VNet to VNet. I'll show you pictures. I know this is dense. I'll show you pictures of this. But the value proposition here is very simple. You may have today networks on premises, your classical networks, that are segmented, like for multi-tier applications, a front-end talking to a back-end to maybe a middle tier in between and so forth. And you may have on premises today physical firewalls and network topologies and ACLs and subnetting. Guess what? You can do virtually the same now in the cloud through virtual networks that can talk to each other through virtual gateways. So you can take sophisticated, complex topologies, lift them from on-prem, and put them in the cloud, and gain the same flexibility over visibility of your endpoints, of load balancing of external endpoints versus internal endpoints, and controlling all the IP addresses in them. Again, I'll show you pictures and scenarios, and you see also demos of this stuff. Thirdly, the third big category we were announcing at this conference is cross-premises connectivity. So I mentioned earlier we already have site-to-site VPN solutions where you can take your existing network topology on-premises and connect them through VPN devices to Azure. We already have point-to-site, which you can take your dev box and connect it to a virtual network in Azure. We've enhanced those. Now we can do multiple VPN, multiple site VPNs. So you can take multiple data centers, which you may have on-premises or your hoster, and all connect them to the same VNet. As again, you can do it this way for a number of reasons, high availability and so forth. You can also do cross-region VNets now. So you can take a virtual network in one Azure data center or region, another somewhere else, and connect them through gateways. And the scenario there, the value proposition there is for high availability. You can take SQL always on and do fill over between the cloud. And you see a demo of this as well. And lastly, we have launched the ExpressRoute program. There's a whole section toward the end on ExpressRoute. ExpressRoute, in a nutshell, is a way for you to reach the cloud without using the internet. For enterprise customers, for many of you in the audience, you know what I mean. The internet is, frankly, the Wild West. You put a packet on it, it shows up, it goes somewhere, shows up at Azure. What happened to that packet? I don't know, you don't know. With ExpressRoute, you know. With ExpressRoute, you can partner with a number of our partners, service providers, and telcos, and have secure, guaranteed connections between your on-site and Azure. And I'll say more about all of that as well. Okay? So again, the rest of the talk, I'll go through these, show demos, end with ExpressRoute, and some examples of actual customers using this stuff. So let's start with internet connectivity. Basically, the features that we've added for reaching your application from the internet. First is IP address reservation. This is the ability for you to reserve your public IP addresses from our pool and keep it in your back pocket. And then you can reuse it across redeployment of your application or applications. Before, if you look at this picture, it used to have, you may have an app, a service, a cloud service with a public IP address, everything is good. And you may, or your customers may have built assumptions that this IP address is yours. They may, for example, have set up router ACLs on premises to allow traffic to that IP address. Without IP reservation, if you redeploy the service, you're more than likely to lose your IP address. You get another one, which is really a pain for many customers. With IP reservations now, you can reserve the IP address, redeploy the service as much as you want to, or just hold it in your hand and assign it later to a service. You have control of those IP addresses, and you can have a bunch of them and so forth. And again, this way you don't break many scenarios that frankly they can be broken when the IP address changes. Some of the scenarios would be, as I mentioned, ACLs on existing routers, some disaster recovery and backup solutions where an assumption is made that the IP address is X and then becomes Y and so forth. This is available today for new deployments. So if you do a new deployment today, your IP address can be reserved. For existing deployments, we will, within a few weeks, maybe a couple of months max, transparently move your infrastructure from the old implementation to new implementations. You can also reserve the IP addresses. But please go try it out today. Okay? We're also announcing instance-level public IP addresses. What this means is every virtual machine, if you want it to, can have its own public IP address, directly addressable from the internet with full fidelity of IP, basically. We don't do broadcast and multicast, but beyond that, you can just go hit it. So you can assign the public address, IP address to every VM. And if you look at the before picture always looked something like this, always through a VIP, which is load balanced. It has to be an external VIP. It has to be load balanced with some restrictions on it. That was the only way you can hit your VMs from outside of Azure. With instance-level public IP addresses, you can optionally, if you want, have some, all of your VMs also assigned a public IP address that's directly addressable from anywhere. And the scenarios here include setting up FTP services, if you want to monitor your VMs directly by IP, a slew of others as well. A slew of others that actually come from if you're forklifting an application from on-prem to the cloud, and you are faced with the need to have exactly an IP address for your VMs. Now we can do so as well. Again, it's available now. We also enhance a traffic manager, because I'm going quickly, there's a bunch of them here. Let me show you, I want to show you demos as well. So just a bit of background on traffic manager, if you know what it is. It's a DNS engine with a policy that allows you to have multiple entry points potentially around the globe, and you do active health monitoring, automatic failover based on a number of policies between your DNS name and those entry points. And the policies, we have a number of them, but in essence, if you lose an entry point or an endpoint, we basically can go and send the traffic somewhere else. And you can choose things like a performance policy where it will get you to the closest available endpoint. Up until recently, this was only possible for Azure endpoints, that is for your applications running in Azure. You could not mix and match. You could not have a hybrid solution where some app is maybe running on or on premises and one running in Azure. Now you can. So what we are announcing now is the ability to have support for non-Azure endpoints as part of your load balance service. So look at the picture. You may have a CNAME for your company's name that points to the actual endpoints from traffic manager itself. That's load balance among different endpoints. Up until recently, the only possible scenario was the left-hand lower box. They had to be endpoints in Azure. This is what the cloud services box is referring to. So you could do whatever you want to as long as your application was running only in Azure. A few weeks ago, we announced at Build the ability to also include Azure websites endpoint. So you can mix and match. You can, for example, have some static content in websites and some dynamic context in other VMs. What we now also allow you is to have external endpoints as part of your application. So the scenario could be you can combine endpoints or part of the application on premises, some of it running in Azure in Europe, in the US, and depending on the policy, traffic will go to where you want it to go. You can build disaster recovery scenarios this way as well, where you may say, great, I'll send all my traffic to public cloud, but if something goes wrong, I can shut the traffic to my on-prem system as well. So you now have the flexibility for your endpoints. They can be Azure endpoints, they can be websites, and they can be your favorite IP address anywhere, frankly. Including a third-party cloud provider, we don't really care. Again, this is available today. So switching subjects from how sort of you get to your services to what we have invested for intra-region communication within Azure. Okay. To recap quickly what virtual networks can do, again, this is existing today for a while. A VNet is effectively a logical isolation control over the network. Think of it as like a VLAN in the cloud, if you want. It's a boundary. You can create subnets, and you can bring your IP addresses to it. And you can also have your own DNS service or use our DNS service. And it's secure. You can talk freely within it, but from outside to you, you have to go through public IP addresses. And as I mentioned earlier, you can connect it to on-prem as well through VPN solutions. So this stuff is already existing, if you want. But it had a number of limitations, which we are removing now. Now you can, within a VNet, have internal load balancing. This is actually a big deal, guys, for a bunch of scenarios. This enables you to do load balancing to internal endpoints, where you decide who can access this internal point. That internal endpoint can be purely within your cloud service, can be within your virtual network, and or it can be hit from your on-prem connection to your virtual network. So you can build multi-tier applications where, like this picture shows there, the back-end blue boxes there. This could be your database systems, for example, that are fronted by an internally load-balanced IP address. The only people who can hit that IP address, either your middle tier, your front ends in this example, or potentially your traffic from your on-premises virtual network connection. But internet traffic in this example cannot hit your internal load balancer. So just imagine what you can do with this. You can take a multi-tier application, segment it appropriately, have internal endpoints that you control who can get to as well. And here's some scenarios on the left-hand side here. Lots of line of business apps we actually know from our own Microsoft IT department needs this. SQL Always On scenarios needed this thing. You can RDP to internal endpoints, for example, by only doing it from inside the cloud and so forth. By the way, virtually everything I told you, by the way, is orthogonal. You can mix and match. You can combine these in different ways. We show you examples in a second as well. So that's ILB. We also now enable, and you can combine these two, by the way, in-region virtual network with VNets. So up until today, you could do a VNet, nice and dandy, hit it from the internet, connect it on-prem. That was it. Now we can, if you will, cascade them, link them together within the cloud. So in this, if you look at the horizontal blue clouds within the cloud there, you could have your front-end servers that are being hit by the internet run in one VNet, put your websites there, put your front-ends, whatever you want to. Then you can have a secure connection to another VNet for your middle tier. Maybe reduce the number of ports you can hit, reduce the connectivity, and hit then maybe a back-end virtual network where your data, for example, lives. This is what we have been doing on-premises for a long time, but typically by hand, typically by standing VLANs by hand and maybe putting firewalls and so forth. Now you can do it all virtually in the cloud. The topologies are up to you. You can mix and match these things. So basically, now we've removed a number of hindrances that many of us used to have trying to lift, if you were, an application from on-premises and land it in the cloud. There's a bunch of details I'm not going through here, but a key one I want to point out is that each VNet can be a different subscription. That's a big deal if you are from a big shop where you have multiple subscriptions with different departments. And I'll show a different scenario in a second where it becomes even a bigger deal. So you can mix and match, if you will, different subscriptions that belong to you, one per VNet, this one. Okay? So, nutshell, in-region VNet to VNet allows you rich topologies where you can build your own security boundaries as your application needs dictate. So I talked quickly about how to hit the apps from outside, how to get traffic from outside your application. I spoke of what we do within or intra-region, within one region. Now I'll speak about cross-premises technologies, communication, between on-premises and the cloud, and between the clouds as well. So as you may know, I'm recapping, this is stuff we've had already. We have point-to-site and site-to-site VPN technologies today. Point-to-site, developer scenarios, bring up your laptop, connect to a VPN, from your laptop to your VNet, go to town. You can do this today. You can also take your favorite VPN device, we have a list of them which we're expanding, and connect your on-premises network, some subset of it, to a virtual network in the cloud. What we're doing now is we're expanding the site-to-site technology, and we're adding also the private connectivity solution, ExpressRoute, which I'll tell you more about as well. These are options available to you. You can use none of them, you can use all of them, you can mix and match. So just a recap, you can take a virtual network, the envelope I told you about earlier, where you put your apps and IP addresses, and connect them securely from anywhere using point-to-site. You don't have to install software in your laptop, it's easy to set up. It's really great for dev and test scenarios. Our own guys, when they go debug their applications, typically they open the laptop, the VPN enter a VNet, and they go. And you can mix and match point-to-site with site-to-site, by the way. So the same VNet can be hit from different locations. They can be hit from your VPN device in your IT department, and they can also be hit from your laptop as well. We also always had for a while the site-to-site connectivity, where you may have a hardware VPN device or a software VPN device to extend a portion of your on-prem network to your VNet in Azure. And this, again, this is a very popular feature, and you can do things like, you know, take your subnet, make it extended from one place to the other one, AD scenarios, DR scenarios, you name it. We've had for a while support for a number of VPN devices, both hardware and virtual, and these are existing devices. We're also announcing that we have increased the number of devices, both hardware and virtual, by new vendors as well here. They're all documented, they're all tested, and you can go to town with any of them. And these are what you would use for your site-to-site on-premises devices. We will continue to expand the list, by the way. So if you have any suggestions, shoot us an email, please. We're also, this is a big one, guys. This has been a very highly sought feature. So we took the ability to do site-to-site, which was limited from one site to one VNet, and now you can have multi-site connectivity. In other words, you can have your multiple sites, your multiple on-premises data centers, your branch offices, whatever it may be the case. They can all connect to the same VNet if you want. You can have, you would do this thing typically for geographic dispersed systems. We have a limit of 10 sites. If you want more, give us a call, but it's a good number. The figure on the right-hand side shows how you could do the basic stuff, where you take a site and connect it to a VNet, or take the same site and connect it to multiple VNets and the same VNets as well. The flexibility is yours. There's also one more way you can connect them, which is this way. You can also, if you want to, and there's a specific scenario why we've done this one, do cross-region VNet connectivity. So in addition to having your on-premises connecting whatever way you want to with the cloud, you can take now a cloud VNet, another cloud VNet in Azure and Azure, and connect it through a gateway as well, which is the yellow line on your hand side there. And the prime scenario, by the way, is for SQL always-on sync across region replicas here. And I think this is part of the demo as well, Yushin, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So as I mentioned earlier, for the intra-region VNTDB connectivity, the virtual networks can be in different subscriptions, and they can securely communicate across IPs. And that's a big deal, guys, because typically you may have one subscription in one region, other one in a different region, a different department. Now we can actually make them work, even if they are cross subscriptions. And there's some scenarios listed there as well. Divisions within your company, different communication for workloads and so forth. And again, available today. Please go try it, guys. Now, I've been talking quite a bit. Let's show you how this stuff actually really works. So Yushin, it's yours.
Hey, thank you, Yusuf. So how's everyone doing? Good? Okay, so Yusuf talked about all the new networking features that we are releasing this week for TechEd. And we actually have a couple of other sessions. For example, Narayan actually showed how the IOB works and how it actually worked with VNet to VNet. That's actually the next slide. So I'm just going to show the picture. I'm going to show something actually very simple. So we talk about multi-site. We talk about VNet to VNet. I'm going to show you what it looks like, how you build it, and how you use it. So this is actually a demo Narayan showed yesterday, that how internal load balancer IOB integrates with both your on-premises that you can access the IOB endpoint, inside the cloud, also from other virtual network, if you will. But what I'm going to show here is actually something very, very straightforward. So let me switch to my screen. So we talk about multi-site. We talk about VNet to VNet, what it looks like. This is my Azure portal. I just log into my account. So let's scroll down to network. Okay, so I have a couple of virtual networks here. This is what it looks like before. You have an Azure virtual network connect to one on-premises location. And if you have point-to-site VPN, we show the number of VPN clients connected. But there's only one tunnel. This is what you will be able to do starting this week. So from this virtual network, I'm using the numbering VNet 0, West US, just so that to kind of highlight this number and also the region of this particular VNet. So because now we are connecting to multiple VNets, so we talk to our portal team, hey, can we get nice graph? They say, no, table. That's what we get. So because it's getting hard to show. So you can see that, let's take a look. So from this particular virtual network, I'm connecting to four other virtual networks, so VNet 1, 2, 3, 4. And you can see they are actually here as well, right? So you can click on any one of that, and this one is in East US. So if you go back, they are smart in a sense that you have one, they go back to the graph. If you have multiple, then you go to the table, right? So the first one is VNet 0 to 1, both in the West US. So this is in the same region. 2, 3, and 4, we have East US, Southeast Asia, Japan East. So these are secure connections, IPsec protected, but at the same time, they are also flowing through the Microsoft managed network. So it's kind of the second part is we typically don't broadcast that fact, we don't make the assertion, but they actually flow through the Microsoft operated network. And on top of that, this is completely secure, IPsec IPE, right? So, you might notice that there are some information here. Even though portal shows this, right now because of schedule mismatch, so we release this feature on the platform, you can do it, but then portal right now only support limited capability. It'll show this, and you can see that the typical information, what's the VIP of your gateway, we show bytes in, bytes out, all the usual stuff. But some configuration option, basically if you want to change this particular virtual network, currently portal blocked it. But you can use PowerShell and REST API to do it, which I will show just shortly. Another thing I want to call out is for all of this rich connectivity option, the topology, we only support dynamic routing gateway. Okay, so as some of you may know, even here we have a policy-based VPN and route-based VPN. That's really the difference. Static routing gateway is really what the industry called the policy-based VPN, which is basically filter-based, try to determine based on the filter goes into the tunnel or not. For connecting rich topologies, you really want to use forwarding and routes, right? So the route-based VPN basically allow you to use routing table to direct the traffic in and out of the tunnel, and then you set up one tunnel, one SA, and connecting all of them to it. Even though we don't support BGP, which is on our roadmap, but we are calling it dynamic routing gateway for now. So what if you actually have a policy-based VPN or a static routing gateway? Actually, what you need to do is that on the Azure side, if you have dynamic routing gateway, you don't need to do anything. As of now, if you have a dynamic routing gateway, you can start adding tunnels, connecting to new sites or connecting to other virtual network, and I'll show you how to do that. If you have a static routing gateway, what you need to do is you need to delete the gateway and recreate the gateway. You don't need to touch any of the virtual machines inside the virtual network, so those we will not touch, right? Unfortunately, there is a caveat in the sense that your side of the VPN device does need to support the so-called route-based VPN. And as Yusuf mentioned, we actually added more support. We validated more VPN devices that are actually compatible with Azure. This is the page that we list those devices. Actually, it turns out not a lot of people know about this page, right? So this is on our MSDN, on our virtual network page. So we have a about VPN device and virtual network. If you scroll down, you can see that. Let me zoom in a little bit. This is basically the table of the VPN device that we work with the vendor. They actually build it, test it, and they send the device to us. We validated that it works. And on top of that, you can see the compatibility between static routing gateway and dynamic routing gateway. Most of the large VPN vendors, they support both, but there are certain devices that they don't. So for those, you might need to switch your VPN device or maybe have a second one that's actually supporting dynamic routing gateway. So all you need to do is make sure that your VPN device is compatible with dynamic routing gateway. On the Azure side, it's a simple delete and recreate. But you do need to make sure that on your premises, the VPN configuration actually works. So let's get back to this page. So and right now, you can see that the first four is really VNet to VNet, right? So I'm connecting to another virtual network in my subscription. The next two is actually connecting to two other virtual networks in a different subscription. So I call them sub2-5-6. And then just for show, I throw in two on-premises locations that's sitting in our offices just to make sure, to demonstrate the point. Right now, I'm actually connecting up to 8 sites, and we support up to 10 at this point, as Yusuf mentioned. So let's go to the other subscription, and I'll show you how to actually add or remove tunnel, and let's see if we can fix this. So right now, this is showing disconnect. Let's see if we can fix that as well. So I'm going to switch to another subscription. Okay, so the front page shows everything. So let's go to the networking part. So you can see that this is actually sub2-5 and sub2-6. If you click on sub2-6, this is the one that we were having problem with. So I have two sites connected, but both are disconnected. So we're trying to fix the one that's connecting to VNet-0 West US. That's what we just showed. So in order to do that, because portal currently doesn't support configuration on the portal, so this is what you need to do. I'm going to go through the step, and some part I'm going to cheat a little bit just to kind of for the interest of time. So you hit the export button here. What this will do is it actually generates a file that's describing the topology, specifying the number of virtual network you have, the number of connections you have, and some other, the subnet structure, the DNS server. I mean, let's take a look at that. So you just hit OK. It's actually an XML file. You can see that it's actually downloaded very quickly. So let's save. I think I have a demo folder. Let's just save there. Oops. It typically, for some reason, on my laptop doesn't like to overlap, so I'm just going to give it a different name. So yeah, you can see it's running security scan. But so I downloaded one earlier. So this is basically the one that's for the subscription that I just showed you. So you see that from here, I actually collapsed the sort of the detail of each bracket. So you can actually see I have a bunch of local network site defined. Within each local network site, you define the prefixes and the VPN device addresses. And on the virtual network part, this is what we're going to focus on. So we have a bunch of VNet. You see sub2-5 and sub2-6. Under this, you have address space, you have subnet structure, you have DNS server. We're going to focus on the gateway section. This is where we say what this virtual network, this VPN gateway, is going to connect to. Before, you can only have one local network site ref because we only support one tunnel up until this week, right? So you can see that this is your headquarter. Basically, all we did is we enable you to have multiple of this. On the platform, we will take it. Each one of these will correspond to one IPsec tunnel, and we'll set it up on our VPN based on the information you provide. And just to show you how you can do it, once you download this file, I'm gonna take this virtual network. This is test VNet 4. Right now, as you can see, there's only one connection, right? So this is all you need to do. I'm simply gonna copy and then paste. Of course, right now, they are the same name. So you need to give it a name of the local network that you already specify. So let's type that in. VNet-0-West-US. And then save it. And literally, this is it. The next step you need to do is just go back to the portal, or you can use PowerShell and then import this back. But while I'm here, I'm going to fix that connectivity issue as well before I actually imported this back. So in order to do that, so I just showed the first step. You added one tunnel. Today, in the Azure platform, when you create a VPN tunnel, by default, we generate a really long string of pre-shared keys. And for that, let's use PowerShell to take a look. And Ganesh actually told me, because a lot of people are probably not that familiar with PowerShell, can we do a show of him? How many of you actually used the Azure PowerShell before? Okay, that's very good, actually. So if that's the case, I mean, it's actually very straightforward. If you start from the PowerShell screen, nothing, and early on, we were trying to figure out the screen connectivity issue. I think some of you actually saw me try to install PowerShell in real time and try to configure it. I almost made it to work. And then we figured out, the screen actually works. So I revert back. But it's actually very straightforward. So what you need to do is you call this one. So you say get Azure property setting file. And once you hit enter, it actually redirects you to a browser. Because right now, I already logged in. So it didn't ask me for my emails and ID. And then you just save this file. So let's just say save as. Easier access. Let's put it right here. I'm going to call it a name that's a lot shorter than this. Tech at demo. You save it. That file basically contains all the information the PowerShell environment will need to set up to enable to access your PowerShell, basically via PowerShell to access your account information online. So the next step is, once we got the file, we import the file into the PowerShell environment. So this is what I just did, right? Okay. And in my case, the account that we actually share with a couple of our colleagues, so it actually has a lot of accounts. So this is what you need to do. Select the particular subscription. And as you can see, as I'm typing, this is the ISE. It actually starts to show what the available option kind of, you can just tap it. I think that one is called WA Partner Test. And once you do that, you can do a very simple, let's just show what's there. Right? So this one will show the virtual networks that we currently have. And to make it easier to read, we can actually just format it to the table and pick the field that you want. So you can see we do have the sub2-5, sub2-6, right? So we want to set the keys. So let's double check the keys. Right? So the name of the virtual network, sub2-6, this one is in West Europe. And right now, it does have two local sites, so we need to specify which one we want. And we want VNet-0, this one in the West US. Right. So as I mentioned, by default, we generate a really long, humanly unreadable string just to make it totally secure. But unfortunately, we generate one here, we generate one on the other part. So we need to set it to be the same value. I already set it on the other side to a value that's also equally secure, and that's what I need to do right now. So as part of this release, before you can only read, you can only get, but now we also allow you to set. So I'm simply going to say set here. So now you can actually set the pre-shared key value, right? So with the power comes the responsibility to make it totally secure. So you want to make a long string that's somewhat random, that's really secure. Azure A1, B2, C3, D4. And that's it. So right now what I'm doing is I'm setting the IPsec Ike pre-shared keys on the VPN gateway to the tunnel. This is exactly the same value. Let me see. Yeah, exactly the same value that I use on the other side. So give it a couple of minutes because our portal actually kind of pulls the status asynchronously. So typically, even if you set it just now, it probably won't reflect. And right now it's actually async operation. It's actually still doing stuff at this point. And after a couple of minutes, you should see this start to change from disconnect to connecting, and then we'll start getting bytes in, bytes out, right? So this is basically how you set the keys. And as we actually just edited this one, so don't forget to import it back. And this is what you do. You go to the plus. This is the virtual network section, right? So all you need to do is come down to import configuration, browse for the file, and then literally just select the file we just added. And it'll show you what's changed, what's not changed, and stuff like that. And then you hit yes. So I show you how to add a tunnel. To remove a tunnel, basically exactly the same thing. From here, you simply delete this line and then re-import the file again. But a little tip, because this actually consists of the most up-to-date information from your network configuration in Azure. So what you want to do is anytime you want to make a change, always download the most recent version, as in 5 minutes before you want to make the change, and then make the change and then upload back. Because if there's some inconsistency, no big deal, the upload will fail. And typically nothing bad will happen because let's say you accidentally delete the entire virtual network. Our platform is smart enough to say you actually have virtual machines or gateway running. In that case, even though you try to delete it, but we will actually fail the deletion. So you don't need to worry about losing your virtual network or the VMs inside the virtual network that way. So far, any question? So what I'm showing here is basically what the multi-site and the VNet connectivity looks like and how you build it. In the next demo, I'm going to show you how you can actually use it, a very popular use case, SQL always on. But I want to pause here to see if there are any questions so far. OK? And once you upload it, this is what you will see. It's very scary that I only updated one of my network, but all my virtual network are showing update. This is a bug that we're working with the Ox team. So at this point, really only if I remember correctly, this guy, the test VNet 4, is updating. Everything else is just kind of an artifact that we upload by default. They start showing everything is updating, and then gradually you will see the ones that we did not touch will show created. That's kind of a weird term we show, but it's actually no harm. And then only the last one that is really updating will stay that way a little while longer. Okay, so let's switch over to the, while this is working, I mean, we can come back before the demo is over to see. The next one is, once again, another very popular scenario for virtual network to virtual network, VNet to VNet, SQL always on. So this is primarily for HA and DR purposes. So you have SQL cluster. Before, you can only do SQL cluster, part of it running on premises and part of it running in the cloud. But now, if you want to move to an all-cloud setup, I mean, leveraging the Azure geo-redundancy, and you can all the your storage geo-replicating and stuff like that, then this is the cloud-only setup. So in this demo, this is a very simple demo. We have a SQL always-on cluster setup across the central U.S. region and the west U.S. region. The direction is kind of reversed. West should be, well, I mean, you get a drill. And you can see that this is a cloud-only setup. So we have AD and DNS running in one of the region. If you really want a completely DR and HA setup, you can have a domain controller replica or a read-only copy of your domain controller on the other side as well. So right now, what we are going to show is that there are two replicas, the primary and secondary running in central US region, and there's another replica running in the west US region. So let's take a look at that particular virtual network. Actually, not this one. Let me switch back to. So this is the virtual network subscription that we set up for the SQL team. So there are two virtual network that's for this demo. The first one is Contoso2Net, and the second one is the HWListNet, so ListenerNet. So this one has the primary and all the infrastructure components. Let's take a look. And this one is in the West US. Right, so you can see that it's Contoso2Net connecting to HWListNet, and which is actually down here. And it's been connecting up for a while. We have very simple workload running, and the SQL synchronized traffic, you can see it's up to like almost over 3 gigabytes of traffic in and out between the two VNet. And if you scroll down to the VMs running inside, you can see the domain controller there, and there's the Windows cluster, Quorum. And the key here is that we have HA region 1 VM 1 and HA region 1 VM 2. So these two VMs are the actual SQL server running on the first region. And if you go to the second virtual network, we have region 2 VM 1. We only have one VM. That's the other one is actually for another purposes. So this is what we're going to use. And you can see that I think it should be reversed, but the number might be a little bit off for rounding errors and stuff. So let's go to the SQL server. This is your basic SQL server setup, so SQL Management Studio. You can see that this particular database, we have availability groups set up, right? And we have one primary and one secondary. These both are in region 1, VM 1 and 2. And it is set to automatic or the synchronized mode because these two are literally running inside the same data center. And the other one, the region 2 VM 1, because of the latency, this one is actually in the central US region, away from the west US region. So the recommendation is that you set it up as an async mode so that when it fail over, the automatic one, they will fail over automatically. The async one, you will have to perform a manual failover. That's what we will do. So for some reason, let's say if their Azure has a large-scale data center outage, you lost the West region, then you would connect to your database and perform a manual failover. And you can see below that, even though they are synchronized and they are async mode, you can see the last committed number, you can see the last committed time, and all the stuff here. So you can from this screen, you can see how synchronized or how whether there's any transaction that you need to sync. So just to show, let's see if I can scroll down a little bit. This is going to show very simple stuff. So let's ping. This is HA. Listener region 1 VM 2, right? So you can see that this is in the same region. The latency, the ping latency is less than 1 millisecond. And if I ping region 2 VM 1, let's see the latency. A couple of things. You notice that I just type in a short name. So the domain controller, the DNS kick in, it's actually resolving to a private IP address. It's not going to the public IP addresses. And this latency is about 40-some milliseconds. Our experience is that between east and west, the latency typically is from between 60 to 70 milliseconds from east coast to west coast. And this is somewhat in the middle, US central. So probably cut it in half, between 30 to 50 milliseconds. So let's do a failover. Oh, not this one, actually. It's right here. So this one is the primary. I want to fail over to the secondary down there. Right? So what you will do is right-click. You say fail over. Drag the screen over. Right? So it lets you pick. And for the synchronous one, typically it shows green. For the async one, it shows yellow. This is just kind of to give you a warning that there potentially could be some time lag in terms of transaction, just so that you are aware of. So there's potential data loss. And then you say next. Once again, another warning to make sure that you understand what you're doing. Next. Ooh, this is not connected. And then we start a failover. So this is crossing the region, so it's not as fast. Ganesh did a demo of this SQL failover using ExpressRoute from on-prem to Azure, which takes probably all of 5 seconds, and this is crossing the region, so it's probably taking slightly longer, but not that much longer. So you can see that we fail over successfully. And then now this guy becomes the primary right here. And you do need to do one thing, though, because the database, let me refresh. Typically, once you fail over, you have to resume the data movement just to make sure that once fail over, by default for the async one, they actually stop the movement. So you can see that what I just did, I fail over a database from US West region to the US Central region using SQL AlwaysOn. And this is VNet to VNet communication back to this particular. VNet to VNet communication inside of Azure. So your SQL replica traffic, your cross region, it's all crossing the region using the secure VNet to VNet communication. And that's it for my demo. Any questions so far before Yusuf come back to finish with Express Route? Yes, go ahead. You mean between the VNet? So right now, we only do static routing, as in anything is considered static routes. We don't do BGP yet. It's on our roadmap. So basically, the next CFG that I actually show, in a way, it's specifying what address we will be routing to the other end. So that's another way of looking at it. Let me show this very quickly. Right. If you look at this file, let's just pick the V. So this is what we do is we take the prefix, we actually add it as a route onto the VPN gateway. So we know, and from this particular virtual network, if I see this prefix, it'll go into the particular tunnel going to VNet Zero West. So right now we do the takeaway is we do static routing, and this is where you specify the routes. So sort of what address it can communicate, but also the routes that we provision. Yes. Yes. So today we don't support that in a very straightforward manner. Once BGP comes, then you can that will just work automatically, right? But now there is a way you can actually manipulate this the prefix to make it work. If you are really interested, I can talk to you offline, but it's not recommended. So let me just say that, because it's very easy to get into the situation that you think this will reach the other end, but it wouldn't. So I would caution people before doing that. But it is possible, yes. Okay? If no other question, I'll hand it back to Yusuf. Thank you very much. Oh, sorry, go ahead. So today, we only charge anything that goes out of the region. So we charge the same rate as the egress data transfer charge. So if you have two or three virtual networks all within US West, for example, then the traffic sending within the region, we don't charge. But if you have a US West sending to, let's say, Japan East, that traffic we charge based on our egress data transfer pricing. The VPN today, we really only charge for the compute, the VPN gateway compute hours. As in one tunnel, 10 tunnels, we don't increase the charge just because you have one tunnel versus 10 tunnels. So you charge exactly the same. We charge exactly the same rate as we charge today for the VPN gateway compute. And data is basically volume-based. You send more, you will charge you more. Yeah. Okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Yuchen. It's really great to see features that we talk about actually in action. So my last topic is Express Route. And again, we have other sessions on Express Route. I will give you an overview of the program. I'm using the word program here because it's a multifaceted aspect to Express Route, and give you some examples of users using it today, and also some of our partners in this space. So a reminder, what's Express Route? It's a way for you to reach Azure without going through the internet. It's basically a way for you to work with our telco and service provider partners to connect privately between your on-premises and Azure. The ask we've been hearing from many customers, especially enterprise, especially higher-end customers, that they want Azure on their network. That is, they want to view Azure resources, this VNet stuff we've been talking about and so forth, to appear in many ways as part of their own network. So without Express Route, you end up with a topology like this typically. You may have your on-premises DCs. You may have multiple sites, be they branch offices, data centers, or maybe your hoster cages and colos and the like. But by and large, you have them all over the place. You may have your own wide area network, you know, used or leased from your favorite provider. But otherwise, you are reaching the public cloud. You're reaching Azure through the public internet. You can reach us in this topology through the internet as is or through the VPN solutions we described earlier. It's great. It's easy to set up, but has some issues. You have no guarantees on the path. You have no guarantees on the network latency. Frankly, something goes wrong, and you call us. We have to ask you, who's your ISP? How are your packets reaching us? Because frankly, you put a packet from your laptop or your data center server. It reaches our router somewhere in between. It could be going anywhere. So this is what you can do today without ExpressRoute. With ExpressRoute, if you want to, you can effectively make Azure as part of your network directly through your whatever wide area network you may have today. So you could effectively have your cloud on your own wide area network. You avoid all the risks I mentioned earlier. The connectivity between you and us are going through an actual network provider that we both work with. If there's an issue, you can give them a call, you can give us a call, we'll find the problem. And in some cases, if you get the right topology, latency can be quite amazing, guys. I mean, you should mention an example where if you land the right places, you can do this SQL always on failover literally, but the moment you hit return, it's just going to work because we're very, very close. So you can still use a public internet for obvious reasons, potentially as a backup, for your customers to reach you, for other connectivity needs. But with ExpressRoute, you can guarantee that all or bulk of your code or your communication goes through your private network to hit us in a private manner. So let's tell you more about it. There are actually two flavors of ExpressRoute. And the reason there are two, because different customers want different things. There's the exchange provider method, and there's network service provider method as well. At the end, it's the same software, same application mix, and the like. It's all about how you and your business want to reach to us. In the exchange provider method, you go through between your customer side and us through an ExpressRoute partner location. We have a number of them, and we're expanding them over the globe. You choose a location, you talk to us, they talk to a service provider, and typically for this option, you are getting basically a port. It can go as high as 10 gig. It's highly available. The connection between your provider and us will be highly available. It'll be two connections, actually. But it's you have a lot of customization in this option, but it takes you a bit more time to get on board. You may have to negotiate with them on your fiber. You may have to drop a router in there and so forth. But this is one option, and we have it today with Equinix. We have Level 3 and others as well, and Telicity. The other option is the right-hand side on the slide, the network service provider scenario, the telco or the carrier option, if you will. This is the case where your company or your customer may have their enterprise already going through a wide area network from one of the big carriers, AT&T, for example, BT, or Level 3. You may have the WAN on a big, huge MPLS network. With this option, your Azure virtual networks, your Azure services, become effectively nodes or part of your big, huge MPLS network. So if you're already on, say, AT&T NetBond as an example, you go to the portal, you give us some information, within days, if not hours, you actually have Azure in your MPLS network. The beauty of this is that the policies you have in your network, the controls and so forth, apply to your nodes on Azure as well. Question? Question is, does this apply to also Office 365? At the moment, what we are announcing is ExpressRoute only for Azure. Your input is something we've heard from others about the desire to also use a facility like this to also access 365, so please stay tuned on that. But today, all we're announcing is the ability to get to Azure through these multiple options. We have also a number of partners which we'll be expanding. Equinix, of course, provides us many of the partner locations, and you'll see more about this as well. Telecity in the UK, Level 3, both for both options, and a number of telcos, a number of network providers that provide us accessibility in multiple locations as well. Yes? Yes, yes. So you can, the question is, can we have several connections? So the way it works is you choose the entry points you want to enter into the Azure network. So today, for example, we have an East Coast location, West Coast location, London location. You can choose any, all, none, whatever you want to, locations you want to. And you can basically land in there through any option of the two and enter the network that way. If in the US you enter, say, from the East location, you can hit any region in the US or the West. A single entry point is actually highly available with two connections. If you want to be really, really highly available, get both. So you can enter the network from the East Coast, the West Coast. Each one has two circuits. You're really very well covered. We'll be expanding it globally as well. You see that the entry points will expand globally as well because even though you can get connectivity almost from anywhere to anywhere, you also can then do traffic management. You can engineer your traffic in such a way, your network in such a way to hit the right latency you want as well. Yes? Does it exclude site-to-site VPN? The traffic on ExpressRoute is a private network, so we don't encrypt the traffic. Okay, it's actually encapsulated traffic, not IPsec, if you will. But the functionality of VNets are the same. So we're not encrypting the stuff on the network, but you are hitting your VNets in the cloud through all the functionalities of VNets proper as well. So you can mix and match your synergy as well. There's some limitations I can tell you offline about them, but it's a virtual network. The problem we have, by the way, is we call virtual network in the literature to refer both to VNets in the cloud and to the connection at the moment. We'll figure the terminology later. But basically, yes, you can hit any VNet you want to or any public IP address you have in Azure as well. So today we have a small number of locations expanding. So as I mentioned, we have an East Coast in DC, Washington, DC. We have a Silicon Valley location. We have a UK location. And we have a bunch of others coming soon as well. And our partners have announced the intention to increase it globally. We will increase it globally as well. So you'll see our numbers of locations and partners increasing in due course. This will be happening frequently. We will not wait for 6 months to tell you about the next expansion of ExpressRoute, if you will. Again, it's available today in general availability. This has been a preview for a while as well. And we have at least one extra session, if not is more, but expressed out in details as well. Let me show you two usage scenarios of ExpressRoute. They're representative. One is, the first one, is about how you could extend your public cloud services with an offering on-premises in a colo, for example, in ways that perhaps we couldn't do ourselves. So one partner of ours, Zadara, for example, provide storage services. They're a service provider for storage. They, for example, can get you iSCSI blocks. I don't have iSCSI blocks in the cloud the way they do. So with Zadara, for example, you could buy this service and host it in Equinix and connect it through ExpressRoute to your service in the cloud. If you end up with the right location, latency can be quite impressive. You'll get a couple of milliseconds from our San Jose Equinix location, for example, to our US West. You're effectively, from a latency perspective, in the cloud. Yet, you're able to meet business needs that otherwise I cannot give it to you in the public cloud. So Zadara has a storage service with iSCSI and SANS and a bunch of others. They do their own replication and so forth. By co-locating them within a location where ExpressRoute is available, you're effectively in the cloud for all practical purposes. You can do this thing with others, by the way. Zadara is a good partner of ours, but you can do it with others. You want to have I'm making this up, guys. You want to have a Cray supercomputer very close to your computation in Azure. Drop it in Equinix, for example, and connect to the ExpressRoute. You're effectively in the cloud. You can do it with storage. You can do it with other services. Suppose you have on a tier in your application set that you require a terabyte of RAM. I don't have a terabyte of RAM VMs in Azure. Nobody has, actually, in the clouds. You can go and buy a big honky service, put them into a place close to Express Route, run your data tier in there or your caching tier, whatever the case may be, and hook them through very low latency to the cloud as well. The opportunities here are quite interesting, to be honest. And it's all possible because the locations, you choose the location, and we have worked with the partners to make the whole thing very seamless from a management perspective, from a monitoring perspective, from a support perspective as well. And I believe we're going to show this in a different session with the actual demo as well and everything else as well. I have a pointer to other sessions in a second as well. So this is an example how we can work with partners to co-locate in entry points of Express Sprout other storage facility capabilities, other computation capabilities, whatever the case may be, and effectively use them as if you are inside the cloud itself. Another example, a very big customer of ours, is actually the Microsoft IT department itself. Within Microsoft, we have an IT department, which is frankly one of the biggest IT departments out there. They themselves use Azure, and they're moving the line of business apps from their classical data centers, if you will, to the public cloud. And they're doing it through Express Route. And the numbers are impressive, by the way. I mean, they have more than 1,300 line of business apps managed by IT. They're planning to move 80% of them within 5 years into Azure, all through Express Route. They have a bunch of servers, 40K servers here, most of which will be on Azure within 5 years. And the key for them is really Express Route. And again, there's a talk about this thing. Is it Thursday? I believe it's Thursday. To show you how actually this really works. But in a nutshell is, they view basically all the infrastructure they manage, be it their own data centers or the multiplicity of buildings we have in Microsoft as their data centers or on-premises, if you will. And they connect effectively through Express Route to Azure globally. They choose the entry points, they choose the capacity, and they go from there. They're in control. The Azure assets, the Azure VNets in the cloud are basically part of their network. The IP addresses are their IP addresses. The ACLs, the topology, they control. And Express Route has been the tool for them to actually achieve this. And again, guys, if you're interested in the details, I encourage you to attend the talk. Very interesting, presented by them, to be honest. They're a big IT department. The difference, perhaps, is they know our phone number, so we have really paid attention to them as well. And I know the solution we give to them is also applicable to everybody else as well. Okay, guys, I'm actually done with the talk. I'm going to briefly summarize and leave any free time if you want to for questions for me or the team. The front row here, the team is here. And they know as much of this thing as anybody else, by the way. So in summary, many new features, many other talks about them. We have internet connectivity features. Things like reserve your IP addresses, get your VMs directly, manage your traffic, whether there's inside Azure, outside of Azure, other cloud providers. As you saw from the demos by Yushin, we can do very sophisticated intra-region communication and cross-premise communication now. So we have internal load balancing, which, by the way, ILB and per instance IP is actually in preview, which means, technically speaking, I don't have an SLA for it yet, but we will. Everything else is GA, general availability. You know, distinction for us here. But we manage them, we support them as if it's fully, of course, GA. And we have the in-region VNet to VNet. The topologies here, again, very flexible. You'll tell me, actually, how we're going to be using them. Lastly, for cross-premises connectivity, we beefed up site-to-site and site-to-site, basically, by multiple ways. You can do multiple sites to the VPN, multiple sites to the cloud, and between the clouds. And, of course, we have now the Express Route program, with a multiplicity of entry points, service providers, and carriers as well. You guys, that's my talk. So I will be here for any questions. Here's a question in the back.
Are you going to have the slide deck available somewhere? Not on the,
The question about the slide deck, will it be available? Yes, it will be. It will be on the conference website. And if you don't have it, just ping me. I'll give you the slides. No problem. The public information, of course. Question there?
Are there any plans for WAN optimizations for Azure?
Question is, any plans for WAN optimizations? Again, it's the request we have. It's something we're seriously considering, and we expect to have something as well. Do know that we had a bunch of potential partners out there as well, so would love to know from you offline, perhaps, if you have specific partners in mind we should partner with? Should we complement the solution, et cetera? I do know that with the express route, there are potential for you even to put things together if you really want to, up to a stage as well. But definitely, one optimization and some other scenarios like that are areas we're seriously looking at for the next step for network services from Azure. Any more questions, guys? Here, then there, please. Another very common question. Everybody laughed in the front end. The question was, is there any plans to support more than one interface, one VM? The answer is yes. We're working on it. It's not done yet. I wish I was able to announce it. I typically don't even say yes bluntly, but this one I'll tell you, we're working on it. Very highly sought feature as well. Okay. Yes. Okay, so Ganesh or somebody should answer this question.
Sorry, what's the question again?
Can you do port forwarding for different DCP ports for different
servers? In different regions or? Right. Oh, yes, you can do that today. You can do that too. Just assign different ports, then it'll just work. I mean, we can show you how that works.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. Okay, guys, we're going to finish the talk. Any more questions, guys, please come on front as well. Okay? Come on, guys.